This is Relationship, a podcast presenting a gay look at traditional relationships and values.
With your hosts, the Cratellis. I'm Marco.
And I'm Tony.
Oh, Lord, how are we doing?
Doing fine. Why wouldn't we be doing fine?
I mean, look, we're great. We're absolutely fantastic. If you guys did not watch last week's episode of Relationship, you wouldn't know that Tony and I got a new apartment.
An amazing... No. When Erica did it, it was fine. But that's the only time and the only person. Yeah, we got an amazing new, really big apartment. It's quite lovely. We're very, very happy.
Super happy. Super stressed.
Very.
Super stressed. Because we're moving in like, well, by the time this episode comes out, it's like 2.5 weeks.
Oh my God. Digging my nails into the table.
Oh my God. That just stressed me out having to think about the fact that like literally we are moving in a few weeks. But we are so excited. We just signed our lease today. We're recording this on days before the episode. National Coming Out Day. Yep. And we, we signed our new lease. We took a walk around our new neighborhood.
Bought a bunch of new furniture.
Yeah, we're so excited right now.
I just can't wait to be in and settled.
Yeah, we're ready. Tony and I are machines when it comes to moving. Like, neither one of us enjoy having shit lying around.
Here's my checklist. Get it done. Yeah. Bring over everything. Here's the boxes. Get them unpacked. Throw it out. We're usually substantially, if not completely unpacked the day we move.
Yeah. This is going to be a new scenario for us though, because it's like, you got to remember there's
shifts.
There's three bedrooms and there's a lot of stuff, right? Like, so there's just a lot of things to do. So it's going to be a little bit much, but that said, we are going, it's going to be exciting. We're very excited. Cannot believe we're moving. I never thought we would leave this godforsaken, because this apartment is gorgeous. But I love this apartment, and I never thought we would end up leaving it, because I think we are so in love with this apartment that we've always wanted to like kind of stay here. But yeah, we're leaving, and it's crazy. I know some of our friends are sad. Erica and Steve, like, this is like this is the apartment where like all of our memories exist. Dana, I know she's depressed because she just moved in next door to us and we're leaving.
They've been there what, a year?
A year.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's just, oh, it's a lot. It's a lot, but we're excited, and you guys should be very happy for us, because it's going to be really cool. It's so stay tuned on the Cratellis Instagram page, because I'm pretty sure we're going to, in between unpacking boxes, be telling y'all all sorts of fun stories that exist within all of this chaos. So other than that, how are you?
That is all consuming. So there's no separating my feelings from that. I am moving. That's how I am.
I know. I'm trying to get like Tony to get like excited, and he's very like, I don't know. Like, I'm excited. I'm talking like 7 miles a minute.
That's 100 miles a minute.
Yeah. I was like, that sounds very slow.
Yeah. pretty sure ancient man walked faster than that.
Yes. And I'm like, and Tony's like, and I'm like, are you excited? He's like, I'll be excited when it's over. And I'm like, oh my God, like, can you just like be a little happy, please?
When we're actually in there and we're settled and everything is where it's supposed to be and we lay our heads down on the pillow, that is when I will be excited.
Wow. Well, yeah, we got a lot, but I'm so excited. We have a new apartment, you guys.
It's a great one.
It's a great apartment. So stay tuned, because
maybe we'll post a few pictures in a virtual tour.
Yeah. Tony wants everything to be settled and like in the apartment first before anybody sees it. And at this rate, people don't get to see it until like the end of November.
Mid to late November, but we're only moving in on the first.
Right. But like our new bedroom set and all that furniture and stuff like that is not coming in until late November.
Right.
Mid November.
Which is why they can't see it.
Yeah. Oh my God. You're so funny. I just looked at how long your nails are. You totally need to cut those. Tony and his nails.
How about we talk about a hashtag your relationship goal?
Tony has really Critelli. Long nails. He's going to kill me, you guys, so at least...
Before this move is over.
Oh, no, you can't because...
We'll only need two bedrooms.
No, you need me for the other half of the rent.
So... Not if I get your life insurance.
Anyways, let's hop into our hashtag gay relationship goal, shall we?
That's probably wise. Mm-hmm.
As a reminder, every week, Tony and I will pick a wonderful queer couple and highlight them as our hashtag gay relationship goals. Our hope is to bring these relationships to the forefront and give a sense of positivity and perspective to the gay relationship narrative. If you and your partner are interested in becoming our hashtag gay relationship goals, or if there is a queer relationship that you admire and would like to bring to our attention, please reach out to us. Tag us on some of your adorable couples photos on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Our handle is @podrelationship. Tony and I will take a look at these photos and posts and could potentially highlight you and your partner on an episode of the podcast. So, this week, we are highlighting a couple that fascinates me. I'm like very, very fascinated by them. I think that they are super duper cool and I want to know them. I think they're really fun. And we are talking about the relationship of Yoshiki and Ryuji. I think I said that nice, right? I think I said that correct.
I believe you did.
Let's hope. If I did not, guys, you're more than welcome to DM me and say, bitch.
Could be Ryuji.
Ryuji.
It could be.
Yep. I think, anyways, that being said, this couple is like amazing. So first of all, they have been together for 12 years.
Yay. I was like,
which is incredible. Yeah, it's so much fun. Next, they are based in Okinawa in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I guess one of them is from West Hollywood and the other is from Naha in Japan?
China?
Mm-hmm. No, that is a Japanese flag.
Is it?
Yeah. But they're addicted to Taiwan, as I love to see. So, yeah, they're just so cool. First of all, they're super international. I love that they're based in Okinawa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is just so cool to me. Like, it's just so much fun. So, like, super, super across the pond. which is just so cool. But, I mean, if you scroll on their page, there is just so many cute pictures. They are just super artsy and, like, really cool and fun. And they just know, like... I'm so jealous of people that just know how to like show life through pictures.
Naha is the capital city of the Okinawa prefecture,
which is in Japan,
the southernmost prefecture of Japan.
Yeah, I know. I, unlike you, actually know and understand geography. I'm good at it.
That was more flag recognition than geography.
Well, yeah, but okay. Anyways, I'm just like super fascinated by them. They seem so in love. They seem like they're having fun. They seem like they just, like everything is just like really, like they're just so cool. I just think they're so cool.
They're very much into city art pop. Which I find interesting. Like everything is about like this cool feature of this part of this city or, you know, this weird art installation, this public art installation. It's either that, somewhere amazing that they're traveling, or food.
Yeah. But that's what I think is very fascinating about them is I think that I love the fact that they experience their environments. Mm-hmm. Like all of like, do you see what I'm saying? Like everywhere they go, there is an experience with pictures. That's what I'm saying. You and I, we always joke that there is like this whole beginning part of our relationship that is completely undocumented.
It was not memorialized.
Yeah, because neither one of us took pictures, right? Like we were just never we were just never that couple that like went somewhere and took pictures. Like mm-hmm. we just don't do this. And I like that about them is that it seems like
they do.
They experience things, they go out and have fun with it, but then what they do is like they take pictures and they like, you know, they chronicle it. Like it just seems like it's such a huge part of their experiences and I want to be a little bit more like them. I think it's really cool. It's funny, like we signed our lease today and we completely forgot to even just take a picture for us to sign the lease. We were so hell-bent on reading the doc, the lease, and doing that, that we didn't have the fun in it, right? Like, we didn't have the fun and have a good time and, like, take pictures and, like, smile about it. We were like, all right, now we need the measuring tape so we could start measuring the entire apartment. So anyways, I love Yoshiki and Ryuji. I think that they are incredible, and I think you all are going to like them too. I got to be honest with you. I would love to, you know, quote one of their amazing captions and show you how much they're in love with each other and all that stuff. But a lot of it is in Japanese, and Instagram does not do a very good job of translating.
Yeah, it doesn't translate.
And so well. I would never in a million years dream of trying to read it, the English translation of it, and potentially ruin their experiences and stuff like that behind that. So I'm just not going to do that. And I'm going to end it with saying that you guys need to follow them on Instagram. They are so exciting and so beyond adorable. I'm in love with them. And
how would they do that, Marco?
Well, their handle is @color_your_life. Once again, that is @color_your_life. And again, that is Yoshiki and Ryuji. They are in, they're just so adorable. And like I said, I'm very, very jealous. And I just think that they're so cool. They also have a really cool website called The New Tokyo, so check that out. That's of course www.the-new-tokyo.com. Check them out. Again, they just live life through pictures, and they have their adorable animals, and they're just super. I just like them so much. They're fun.
Agreed.
I'm a huge fan. So that's going to do it for this. Tony and I are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we are going to try to solve the world's problems, Critelli style. Hey, everyone. It's the Critellis here with a quick reminder to head to your favorite podcast platform to rate and review Relationship.
Yep. Your 5-star rating of the podcast helps make Relationship easy to find for those seeking the topics and information discussed in our episodes.
So when you have a few minutes to spare, please hop on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to the podcast, and give us a 5-star rating and a glowing review, telling other listeners why you love the podcast so much.
Once a month, Marco and I are going to read some of our favorite reviews on an episode of the podcast, and yours could be picked.
Absolutely. If you're looking for your few seconds of fame, please go give the podcast a 5-star rating and exceptional review wherever you listen to Relationship.
And tune in every Wednesday to hear your review read on an episode of the podcast. We'll read them once a month, but we'll switch up which week we'll read them on the podcast just to keep you guessing.
We appreciate your continued love and support of us and Relationship.
Thank you so much. Bye. Bye. Hey everyone, it's your favorite podcast host, Tony.
And Marco.
If you haven't already, head to podrelationship.com for more Critelli content related to the podcast.
Check out our weekly #gayrelationshipgoals.
Highlight a queer biz you love.
Listen to episodes of the podcast.
Check out my monthly blog.
Submit listener situations.
Watch episodes of Relationship.
And sign up for our weekly newsletter.
PodRelationship.com is a labor of love and our way of giving you all relationship content throughout the week.
So head to PodRelationship.com right now and get more Critelli and Relationship content you never knew you needed.
See you all there.
Bye. Bye. So you guys are going to get real sick of us this episode.
I'm already sick of us.
We have that in common.
I wake up feeling sick about us.
Oh, yes. No, you guys are going to get real tired of us because this episode we're going to talk about our new apartment again all the entire episode.
No, we're not. We're going to talk about a skill.
Well, we're in relation to getting our new apartment.
We're going to use the apartment as a vehicle to discuss that skill, but we're talking about a skill. Using real life examples to teach people skills. Good positive relationship
You're
skills.
You're boring me
you
already.
You don't know the format of this.
You're boring me already. So anyways, so
about this new apartment.
Yeah, right. You're dumb. So this episode we're talking about as a couple making big decisions together and how to properly do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna open this I'm gonna open this conversation by asking you whether you think that we are good at making big decisions together or not.
No. I think you and I get very stressed out. I think you and I have completely different approaches. I think you and I have such strong personalities and think that we're so right and that we know the best way to do things that all we do is try to convince the other person why we're right.
I mean, I can totally help you out with the situation. You're completely wrong all the time. And so, yeah, so that's the biggest problem. But
case in point.
Yeah.
This asshole over here. So no,
things
I
overheard in the bathroom at the gay bar.
Oh Lord. So no, I don't think. I think that there's tons of room for improvement. I think that you and I, instead of banding together, we experience the stress individually and then occasionally project that stress onto each other.
Well, it's like interesting because I actually don't think that we're bad at it. I think we finally.
Oh, great! Another thing we disagree on.
I think we come together when it counts.
Of course.
Right? Do you see what I'm saying? So, like, at the end of it all, like, yes, we've stressed each other out, we've annoyed the shit out of one another, and we've argued, and we've usually I'm yelling at you. And that's the whole thing. But at when it counts, we come together, and it's really great. I will say that, yes, to your point, we do have different approaches on things, on how to go about doing things. I'm a lot more decisive. Where, like, if I see something, I like it, I want it, I bought it. Like, you know, like, it's really.
I noticed you didn't quote the part where she talks about her hair.
Was that shade? Were you trying to be shady right there?
A little bit.
No, I, like, so I'm, like, very, very, like, let's go kind of thing. And you're very...
It's not that I'm not decisive. It's that I need to fill in a certain number of columns and rows before I make a decision.
Tony, you're incredibly indecisive.
No, I just need the information.
No, you're very indecisive. Like, you're a very indecisive person. You are a, like, review everything, and then you can't make the decision between this and that. And then there's like a list within a list that you have to do. Cause then when you whittle it down to like these options, then you have to like look at different options and stuff like that. So you're very indecisive. It's fine. It is sometimes adorable, oftentimes annoying, but it is also something that I've just come to understand, you know, and while it's not the way that I function, there are things that I like when I feel about something strongly, you'll know, like, mm-hmm. I feel strongly about it. And then when it's up to you and I kind of just don't care about which way you go with it, like, I leave it up to you and I leave it at that. Like, it's like, I'm like, whatever, you make the decision. It's fine. I don't care. And that's just how I've learned to like live my life and function that way. One of the other things, and can I get real with you for a second?
Were you not before?
Oh, I mean, this is going to get real. And it's one of these conversations that you and I have actually just recently had because, one of the other things that I've like learned about with being like in being with you is that, you are very analytical in terms of like, you need all of the information mm-hmm. to be able to make things happen. So I've learned that when it comes time for me to present information to you, that I need to present it fully, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I need to like have all of the everything's mapped out, the information to you, so then you are 100% able to make your choices from there.
Mm-hmm.
What's frustrating to me is that I have learned to do that. Like, I've gotten really, really good at giving you the details, like, and like figuring out, thinking that I'm going to like pick all, like, every question that you're going to ask, or like any information you're going to need, like, I have the answer for it, right? And I do a pretty good job with doing that. What's been a challenge for me to even like understand is that, like, even when I do that, there's even more information that you require, or even though I've given you the information, you need to like figure it out on your own. What would you explain that as?
Well, whenever there's a problem like that, I always say it's two people not communicating correctly. So you think you know what I need to know, but it doesn't sound like you know what I need to know. And maybe I'm just not communicating to you what it is exactly that I'm looking for. So like when I, for an example, like, let's just talk about the furniture that we just bought, right? So for me, it's the aesthetic of the furniture, the actual, like, the fitting of the furniture, the availability of it, the cost of it, the durability and the functionality of it. Like, I need to know those things. I also need, no matter what we're looking at, I always need a comparison, always, because I don't know how much stuff is actually supposed to cost, because it's all made up and it's all bullshit. And it changes all the time because capitalism, yay. But if you tell me, like, just like you did with the furniture, you saw, even though there was a couple of times where there was some moments, but like you saw, we looked at three different potentials as pieces, right? We looked at I looked at the measurements of them. I looked at the cost of them. In the end, we didn't even end up buying the cheapest thing that was the most available. We bought the more expensive thing that was delayed in its delivery. That's what we chose to do. But that's a great example of what I actually need. I need to know, like, here's three that I'm interested in. Here's why I'm interested. It's like literally the standard of a bidding process. That's kind of what I need.
Well, so that's a great example. And yes, I'm pretty good with that. Like, that, I don't really necessarily have a problem with. I think that's super easy. That I can understand. I think it's more along the things like in the new apartment. If you guys are drinking, here's another moment for you to take a shot.
Right. We should have started the episode saying that was a drinking game.
Yeah. No. So like in the new apartment, there is our spare bedroom, mm-hmm. and it is a particular size. It's a specific size. And one morning in my crazy, I woke up realizing that all of our furniture was not going to fit in that bedroom, because we're moving our current bedroom furniture into the spare room. And so I looked at the measurements of the bedroom. I looked at the measurements of our furniture, and I like created the math of everything. I said, so, you know, this wall is going to be, you know, 8 inches deep, or I'm sorry, 8 feet deep, and 8 times 12 is 196. Just, oh, it's 90. I'm 96. Sorry. It's 96. Yeah. It's 96 feet. And so inches. Now I'm getting really confused. And then
have you been playing the drinking game?
Hello. And then our current, you know, bed is a queen size bed. The average queen size bed is about 83 inches, 83 to 84 inches long. And that's a standard in terms of that. So realistically, this dresser that we have that's like 102 inches long, but like 14 inches deep is not going, if you, there's a lot of math right here. It realistically,
those of you who are following along.
Yeah, and the way that the bedroom is oriented, there's like two windows on one side and then there's a closet on the other side. So that means that the only logical place that it would end up having to go is at the foot of the bed. But then there's not enough space between the end of the dresser and the foot of the bed to be able to put it in there. So logically, the dresser is going to have to go. And what we're going to have to do is, you know, get a longer dresser, like a taller dresser, and be able to put it in this space and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. And I did it. I gave you all the information. And even with all of the information, your response to me is, well, I'm just going to have to see what that looks like.
So here's the piece of information that was missing from that. Because this is a different, and I'm going to open the door and let you into my crazy, but here's what I need to know when making a decision to get rid of something or not. Because that's what this is. This is not any other decision other than to get rid of something, right? So this is the best way to put the room together, I understand. What piece of information would be helpful and is missing is, this is what the room would look like if we kept all the furniture. And that's what I needed to know.
Yeah, so, I feel
so that you have the comparison. I told you, I always need a comparison. Here's what the room looks like if you keep everything. Here's the best way to make the room look, which means you're going to have to get rid of some things. But I need that comparison so that I can just in my brain go, oh yeah, there's no way I want the room to look like that. That can go.
Well, in my defense, I literally said to you, and logically, there's no way to keep the dresser because you can't keep it over here because of the windows, and you can't keep it over here because of the closet, and it can't go on the side of the bed because it's not long enough. And I literally went through all of that with you. I literally went through all of that with you, and I talked about the nightstand and where that is going to have to go. I literally went through all of that with you, and it still wasn't good enough.
So if the bed were in the back corner, not in the middle of the windows, but as far to the left of the room, close to the closet as possible, couldn't the dresser have fit along the other wall?
No. No, it couldn't have. And that is what I was telling you. No, it could not have.
Not turning it so that it's this way, and the windows are here, and all the empty space is on the right side of the room. Couldn't the dresser have gone on that right wall?
No. No, it couldn't have, because of the headboard. And the way the headboard would have interacted with the wall and the ledge that's on the wall with the windows and all of that other stuff.
It would have looked terrible. It physically would have fit, but it would have looked terrible.
It wouldn't have worked. Realistically, it just wouldn't have worked. There's only one legit. There's like two legitimate orientations in terms of that bedroom, just by nature of how it, like how mm-hmm. they designed it, yeah. and one is on the back wall or on the other wall, and that's essentially it. But like putting them on the sides is damn near impossible. Like you can't do that, and that's my thing. So all I'm hearing is it's less of a me problem and it's a you problem. Because if I bring the information to you and I literally ticked off just about every question that you would have potentially asked me during that entire scenario, and I looked at everything and I analyzed it and went around and did it, and I have an expertise in that scenario that would have worked, and it's still not good enough for you because you need more answers behind it. There, that is a scenario in which it's not me. I've done everything that I can. You're just going to need to experience it yourself.
Well, I wouldn't call that a joint decision. If you come with the answer already in hand, that doesn't really include me.
Well, you being asleep and me waking up in my crazy, you know, having me go through and do that. And then when you wake up and I say, hey, babe, I have something I want to talk to you about because I was just thinking about X, Y, and Z and all of this other stuff. And this is what's going on. And I looked at the scenario and I did this and blah, 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 and all this.
If that's the logical conversation that we would have had, that would have been fine. But that's not what happened. What happened? And you know, you're crazy. What happened was, babe, wake up. We have to get rid of the dresser.
Okay, that is not accurate. That is not accurate.
I'm sorry. Good morning. We have to get rid of the
dresser.
That
is not accurate.
The conversation started with, we have to get rid of the dresser.
That is not how it happened. No, that is not how it happened. I said, like, I was looking and thinking about the bedroom and how we're going to orient everything in the bedroom with this bedroom furniture, and there's no room for the dresser in it. And I looked at, and here's why. Like, I presented the information to you after that. So, again, And it might have sounded shady the way I presented it, but it doesn't sound like it's a me problem. It sounds like it's a you problem, that it doesn't really matter what information is presented to you. You're going to need to experience it yourself to be done with it. And then it's fine.
I wouldn't call that a problem. I would call that a person's process.
Which is fine. The complications exist within you, not within me. Because and maybe I just need to come to terms with that and be okay with that. It feels like an insult on my intelligence.
It's definitely not that.
It feels that way. And I know
I can understand how I feel.
Yeah, it feels that way. Because it's like, again, I am a fairly intelligent person. And I took a look at things and I, again, did the mathematics behind how the bed and all of that stuff like that was going to fit. I oriented. I did it. This is the stuff that I do. This is what I'm good at.
Yeah. And spatial design.
And I went aesthetic. In and did all of that. And I presented all that stuff.
You're great at that.
And the second I presented it to you, it was a meh. I'm going to have to experience this. We'll see. I'm going to have to experience it. And it feels I have no credibility with you.
I'm sorry you feel that way. That's not what it is for me at all.
So it's hard. So I'm going to bring it full circle. It feels really hard for me to be able to make a joint decision with you, because it's as if what I'm presenting or put out there on the table is not going to be good enough for you until you make the decision that it's good enough for you and you experience it yourself. So we have a very challenging time making joint decisions because, yes, I'm crazy and I present things and I get very excited about things and very quickly, and I don't necessarily have to like go about thinking about all of the other aspects of it. Like when we went in the furniture store, I was already imagining how it would look in the bedroom and analyzing how all that stuff was going to happen. Like I can do those things like very quickly. It doesn't take me a ton of,
yeah, I can't do that.
It doesn't take me a ton of analyzing. Mm-mm. And even though, you know, that's not your skill and it is a skill of mine, I have to, instead of just like being okay with that and like being like, you know what, my husband's got this, I still have to convince you of where my skill set lies.
You don't have to convince me of your skill set, but you do have to involve me in the process. It's not a joint decision if you've reached a conclusion and expect me to just stand where you're standing.
Well, I don't expect you to stand where I'm standing, but I expect you, like, if I see something or I pick something or, you know, something's going on, like, you know that I'm going to talk to you about what I'm experiencing, because I'm a very vocal person. So when I see something, I'm like, boom, I see this, it's going to go against this back wall. Like, this is kind of a thing. Like, how do you feel about this bed? Do you like, I'm going to talk to you about the process. But again, sometimes it just, it's hard to make a joint decision because it's almost as if I don't need to put my experience there, because at the end of the day, you're going to have to experience it for yourself before we can make a decision on things.
I just, you know, I really liked when you used that internet-based that website and you like developed the actual layout of the room. Like, that was super helpful to me.
Yeah,
like, this is gonna go here, this is here, these are the measurements, I already put them in. Like, okay, cool, that looks great.
I did that for you. It felt like an extra step for me, like an extra unnecessary step for me, because I already knew, and I did that for you, and it's fine, and I don't mind doing that, but again, it feels like the compromise lands on me and not on you.
You know, for me, I know that you are decisive. I also know that you hate shopping. You don't like doing comparison. So I'm okay with, we're just going to go to the one store. Like, I'm okay with that. You saw we went to Raymour and Flanagan, and I literally, the only thing I said about it was, oh, I shouldn't have said the name of the place, cut that check. We went to the furniture store, and I said, I assume this is the only place we're going and you have no interest in comparing anywhere else. And I only said that not as shade, but literally just to confirm, yeah, I assume this is what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And that was it. And it was fine. That, and I'm not trying to be defensive or offensive. I'm just trying to be objective. But that sounds to me like a person who's making a compromise or being invested in the process and allowing the other person to do what works for them. But I don't feel like you do the same thing for me. So I'm willing to accept that you are snap decision, you're done. I'm willing to accept that, and I'm willing to be a part of that, but you're not willing to do the reverse for me.
Oh, I don't. And see, what's funny is there were three different beds,
mm-hmm.
and we talked between the three different beds. We selected, we pro'd and con'd it. We looked at those things. And at the end, when it was the decision to like pick the bed, I said, I like this one, but whatever you decide. And so not acknowledging the fact that, yes, the compromise was extended on my way, because I don't need to choose between three different beds, but I did that for you. And I didn't need to like confer with you and see whether or not you had decided on that bed, but I brought you in on the situation and like let you decide and make a decision on that. So that was me like literally trying to bring you in on the process and doing those things too. So I do things, I just don't necessarily do them the way you expect for them to be done, but there are, you know, little peaks and there are little moments that I do end up making those things happen. And so it's interesting, but again, to bring it back to the main point of the joint decisions with us are very, very difficult because we approach things from a completely different,
totally different
way. And so it's super, super challenging. That said, There's an amazing article that we read. I really enjoyed this article, and it's on skillsyouneed.com. And it says, the article is titled Learning to Make Joint Decisions. And, you know, the article begins by talking about, like, you know, when you have always made your own decisions, it can be difficult to consult with someone else on a routine basis. Preach, sis. Like, it is very, very difficult when, and but it says, but this is what happens when you're in a relationship, especially a long-term one, and particularly when you are living together. Even relatively small decisions like whether to go out tonight, what color to paint the bathroom, or the timing and location of a holiday can be fraught with difficulties if your tastes are very different. So they go through and say, like, ways to decide. There are two main bases for use for making decisions, reason or logic, where you consciously draw on the facts in front of you and your previous knowledge and make a decision using that evidence.
Me.
But I think I use reason or logic as well.
Yeah, but largely that's what I rely on.
Yeah, I think I am a combination of these two.
Well, read their definition of the next one and see if you don't believe this is you.
So the next one is intuition or gut feeling. So where your decision has to feel right, intuition is actually a combination of your previous experience and your values and is therefore a valuable tool. It is important to remember, however, that your perception may play a big part in your feelings and they may not be accurate.
So what I'm saying is I think this is you because it says intuition is actually a combination of your previous experience. So it does take your experience into account.
100%.
Yeah.
But I also think that it is rooted in reason and or logic because a lot of what will happen is I will know things because on your previous experience means that there is like a sense of understanding things and like knowing. So like I said, waking up and being able to like do the math mentally and being, that's reason and logic. Like that's literally looking at and mathematically going about and figuring out space and how everything goes. Like that's reason or logic. Now, intuition or gut feeling about like me waking up and like being like, I don't think that the dresser is going to fit. Like that was intuition or a gut feeling. And then I went about figuring it out by using reason and or logic afterwards.
I think you definitely are more the intuition side because you even said it earlier, like queen size beds are typically this long. But that's not an actual measurement, right? And you could be right, and you're probably right, but it just says that you really need to pay attention because it may not always be accurate. That one is probably accurate. They probably are between 83 and 84 inches. That's fine. But that's not the same as saying it's exactly 84. It's not the same as measuring it, no. Which is what I would need.
Right.
I'm just saying as a comparison, if these are the two ways I think I'm A and you're B.
And again, for understand... And that's why I say I'm probably lean more towards B, but I think that a lot of my B goes back to...
Where does your B go to, Marco?
It goes back to the A.
When does the D come in?
But it definitely goes back.
Math can be fun.
Totally fun. No, but I do think it is rooted where I think you're very much so. I also think that there is like an ignorance to a lot of this stuff that exists within you. You've never gone into a place and like tried to figure out how to like decorate it. Right? Like you're very like you're it's like very like
I have. It's just my aesthetic is extremely functional.
Well, there's also a lot of like inherited furniture and things like that. Like things that are just going to like fit in spaces, like, you know, like boom, boom, boom. Whereas I'm coming from more of like where I'm more of like a design aesthetic and I can like look at things
and I don't have like have a full skill.
You don't have that skill.
No, not at
which
all.
Is completely understandable.
Yeah, I've survived almost 40 years without it. I'm okay.
Yeah. And so it's so it's just very interesting. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not disagreeing with you. I do think that mine is more intuition and gut feeling. I would probably say it's like 60% that, where I think the other 40% would come in as intuition. I would even do 70-30. Like if you I'm sorry, not intuition, but reason or logic. Because I don't like I know what I want. And then I figure out how it's possible to attain that and it logically. if that makes sense. And so, yeah, so cool. So in a relationship, it is also worth understanding which your partner prefers. And I think we are very understanding of who is who. And then, yeah, and so it's great. And then it says, like, resolving disagreements and developing decisions. In a relationship, there is no substitute for talking things through as you try to make a decision. This means both explaining your point of view and listening to your partner's ideas. Thoughts?
Do not be tempted to just keep repeating your viewpoint.
What was that, your thought, or were you reading?
I was reading the article, but I think the warning exists for a reason. Mm-hmm. This is what I think you and I do. This is what I said in the beginning. You and I are very strong-willed. We have thought things out in the way that we think or feel things out, or both. Mm-hmm. And we've done that. So now it's just, no, you need to hear why what I'm saying makes sense. And I just, like, for me, I've just decided I'm not getting into those arguments with you, which is why I say I just need to see it for myself. Because I just don't want to argue with you about it. I don't think you and I are listening to each other. I don't think we are talking to each other. I think there's a time when we both reach that point where we're just not listening to each other anymore. Mm. And again, something we need to work on, a skill we definitely need to develop. This is the right website for us. But for me, that's what it is we get to a point where I'm like, there is no talking to him about this right now. He feels exactly how he feels. And I do the same thing. Yeah. I do the exact same thing where I'm like just stuck in my thick-headed way. And I'm like, no, this is right. And I don't care what you say.
Yeah.
We both do it.
Yeah, we do. I guess I think for me, I think that's like so frustrating to me. Because like I said, like, I think that there is like a certain expertise. There is a certain skill set that I rely on you for things for. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you rely on me for anything within my skill set. I think you argue with me over my understanding of my skill set, because it's all like, I can have my skill set, but you still need to be able to like have your feelings about it, which I don't do with you.
I would invite you to do it. Like when it comes to like the finances and the investments, like I'd love it if you were a part of that.
You
could argue with me.
But I don't need to argue with you because you are an expert behind it, and I appreciate and respect you for what you understand. So if I'm going to invite myself in on it, it's because I'm going to want you to like explain things to me or like help me understand it a little bit better, not argue with you over it because I have a certain way that I think that it should be done. And you don't give me that. And I think that that's like super interesting.
I mean, not to get into the therapy of it all, but like, I think part of it is you speak with such assurance that this is the reality of something. And the minute that there's something that's not the reality of something, that triggers me. So like when you say this won't work, I'm like, I just thought of five ways that it would work. Like that's just how I am. Like that's, and I'm not trying to be like nasty or undermine or do anything. I'm just like, wait, I reality test all the time. It's just part of my vigilance. Like I can't help it. So you tell me this can't happen, I'm like, well, here's a bunch of ways that it could.
Well, no, like
even, that didn't make sense to me.
Like even with the bedroom, like you saying like there's all this other way and we could do that, and I'm like, I've thought about those things, but no, that's not a plausible way of going about doing it. And you, and like I said, you just don't.
But my question will always be, why? Just explain it to me.
And I did because the ledge and because of all of these other things, and this is the reason why. But that still wasn't good enough for you. And those are the things that are like really hard for me. And so like even with like the reading of the lease, for example, like I skimmed it because I just skimmed. But that is your expertise. I know you read it letter for letter
everywhere,
and you know and understand everything. And when you are ready to sign it, then I know that it's okay for me to sign it. You are the expert in that. You pay attention to those things. And it's like, great. It's probably not a great skill for me. Like, I should probably get better at doing
that. Might not want to let me sign contracts for
you. Yeah. I probably
decide on signing contracts.
I should probably get better at doing that. But I trust you and I rely on you. And I just don't feel like it's the other way around with you. I still have to convince you or appease you and where you're at with it. And it's like I said, it's a little frustrating. It's kind of like, well, I guess I just am not going to be, the authority or like the person that understands this best, because at the end of the day, you're just going to question me anyway. So we'll get to it when you're comfortable with it. And like I said, it's a little kind of embarrassing, like slightly insulting. Like it just, yeah, it's just a little bit. And like I said, I don't know. It's just really, it's weird. I do like this last paragraph in this where it says, finally, if you are still unable to decide, the default answer is usually to go with the status quo. And I love that. So like, what is normal, quote unquote, normal?
That does not work for you.
Yeah, this is, no, I never go with that. But it doesn't work for you either. Status quo does not work. You are.
Status quo absolutely works for me. Tony, when it comes between a choice of changing something or keeping it the same way it's been, you know I'm going to want to keep it the same way it's
been. But like when it comes, when it comes to doing things the way everyone else does it, you are counterculture. Like you are counterculture.
But in the terms of this, right? To use the moving example, if the choice is to move, to uproot everything, to spend a bunch of money, to have to buy a whole bunch of furniture, to have to go to the bank to get all these checks, to have to sign new contracts, to get a mover, blah, 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 then unpack and pack and, you know, all that, or just not move, like, my default is, oh, I just won't move.
I call
now
bullshit.
I've wanted to move.
I call bullshit.
I've wanted to move, but also in this process, we broke our lease. I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do that at all.
No, I understand that. But again, I call bullshit because every single year you have wanted to move, you have been adamant about not wanting to be here anymore. And right. I've been the person that has been like, we need to stay. We should probably save money. We should probably like wait because it's going to cost us X amount of dollars to be able to do that. Like, we hate to move. Why would we do that? Like, that was the thing. And so here's my thing. And I think this is, again, a fundamental difference in the two of us is I think I am a lot more flexible. I think that I am a lot more versatile in the way
things are in the best
to go, right? And just in terms of like circumstances change and I'm able to like move accordingly. And you are very set in a situation and it is really hard to get you out of where you're at with things.
But isn't that status quo?
No, I don't believe it to be. Maybe I'm wrong, huge possibility, but I think that that is more of your inability to be flexible and less on anything else. We weren't expecting to move. We found a place that was a great price, more than what we could have ever asked for to do it. And like didn't exist. I had done the research and have done the research over the past like few years, just looking for exactly what it is that we're getting right now. And we did not expect for it to come at the time that it did. Mm-hmm. So now that it's here, I'm like, we just need to fucking adjust and get ready to go with it.
That's something I would never have done. If I had found this place, there's no way even for a second I'd have been like, oh, I have a lease. I'm under contract. So it's not an option for me. And that would have been the end of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can understand that. And that's what I love about you is the logic, because you're a lot more logical in that way, which I get. And I love that. And I think we balance each other out because I'm a lot more, let's make it happen. Like, let's do. But at the same time, I don't know that I necessarily define that as status quo so much as I it's more just like set in this situation and being okay with that. But again, you know, you've been wanting to move for a long time. The way it happened is kind of not really the way we had anticipated. But at the end of the day, we have a brand new apartment and we did it. And I think both of us are. Yeah, I think we're experiencing new parts of us to be able to make this happen. So the next part is decisions, persuasion, and negotiation. At what point does a joint decision morph into a negotiation and or a matter of persuasion? The three are very closely linked and may even be a matter of perception. So one person's joint decision may well be another person's negotiation. And I think we do a lot of that.
Agreed.
I think we do a lot of that. It does not really matter what you call it. The point is to find a way to make your decisions together, whether through a process or negotiation or by using the same decision-making framework. So I love that. And it says, after all, you both need to buy into them, so they need to be made together if you are to develop the basis for a long-term relationship. So this was a fun article. And again, I think everybody is going to enjoy it. Sorry you guys had to like sit in on a little bit of therapy that we did not necessarily expect to happen right now. But I think it was necessary. And sometimes it's fun to, in real time, hear a couple's struggles. Yeah?
Yeah. That's the whole point, isn't it? Is for us to show an example and show that we aren't the greatest at it and, you know, show the unpolished parts.
11 years and almost 4 years worth of marriage. Like, I think that if we can do it, then anybody can.
Well, and I will say that despite everything that was said here and the process, that was the quickest decision making we've ever done about anything.
Yeah.
Not just the apartment, but the furniture.
Well, one of the things
to keep versus get rid of.
I did appreciate is that I came to you from like a, and we're going to get off here because we've been gabbing your ears off. But one of the things that I did, I came to you from like a super place of like my like confusion. And I came to you and I said, like, what I'm going to need you to do is, like, if we're going to move forward with doing this, I need to know that we're actually going to move forward with doing this, that you're not just, like, dangling this situation in front of me and we're, you know, wasting our time and these brokers' time by going and looking at these things, but we have no intention of actually moving forward with it. If you really want to move forward with this, then let's go look at apartments. Let's figure the situation out. But if it's not the right time, you don't want to spend the money, everything's gone, like, just please tell me that so that I don't get my hopes up and look at this apartment that I'm in love with and want to move. And you sit back and say, well, we're just not going to do it. So blah, blah, blah. And I think that helped you tremendously. I think right after that, you were like, we're in it. Let's look. You were adamant. We even looked at a second place. We made the decision on this first place and you were ready to go. It was a very, very quick turnaround, but I think you needed to hear.
Well, I always need to hear how you're feeling.
Yeah, I think that's important. Yeah, I think you needed. Yeah, I think you needed to hear that to be able to better understand where I was at and what, like, what was going on.
Absolutely, because I can't read your mind and you can't read mine.
Yeah, so it was very interesting. But so I appreciate it. I love you. I love you.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate you understanding me. I appreciate you bending and flexing the way you have been. I know I've kind of taken you out of all sorts of comforts.
All the comfort zones.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't strip my clothes off.
I will later. I really do appreciate you trying and going through and doing all this. And mm-hmm. like I said, I know it's been a lot, but I don't know. I think this new apartment and everything is a really great move. And I think this joint decision is something that we are going to bathe in for the rest of our lives.
Talk to me on November 2nd.
I don't want to talk to you on November 2nd. That's when it's going to be stressful.
No.
Because we're going to wake up the next morning and it's going to be like, there's still shit everywhere.
No, that's the fun part. Everything's done. Now you just get to unpack and play with your stuff and figure out where it's going to go in the new home. Sure. That part's fun.
I love the optimism.
I told you, just get me through the stressful shit and I'll be fun.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, let's end it here, huh? We've been talking for a long time. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back in just a bit. If you haven't watched our weekly episodes of Relationshat already, I'm starting to think there is something seriously wrong with you.
Absolutely. How could you not want to see us every week?
Exactly. Every Friday on IGTV and YouTube, Tony and I further discuss the week's topic and theme of the podcast with another article and perspective for us all to chew on.
You can watch us talk about why it's important to continue celebrating anniversaries.
Or some of the best and worst relationship advice we've ever received.
Or even the importance of respect within a relationship and what to do if you feel like you're not getting it.
So make sure you're on Instagram or YouTube every Friday and you're watching Relationshat, our weekly after show about your favorite podcast, Relationshit.
Marco and I will see you there. Bye. Bye.
If your partner is driving you crazy,
or your dating life is more tragedy than romance,
we would love to hear from you. Tony and I are definitely not experts,
and we don't claim to have all the answers,
but we do have experience. Just think of us as friends that give you guidance over cocktails.
Head to our website, podrelationship.com, today and submit a listener situation right on the site.
or email us at relationshipquestions@gmail.com and air out all your grievances.
On the third Wednesday of every month, Marco and I will read listener situations on that episode of the podcast. We'll do our best to give you some guidance, and if nothing else, a little perspective.
If your friends can't hear about your boyfriend drama anymore, or you think you've tried everything you can with your girlfriend, know that you have us to lean on.
So head to podrelationship.com or email us at relationshipquestions@gmail.com right now and tell us what's going on in your life.
We won't solve all your problems, but we'll definitely help you out as best we can.
We look forward to hearing from you.
All right, we're back, and I'm super excited today because this interview is actually somewhat close to home for me.
Literally,
because it just so happens that one of the guys here lives in the same city that I went to college. And it was like incredible. I don't even know how it like all happened, but like we started talking, and then I found out that he was in Reno, and then we got to talk about it all and kind of take a trip down memory lane. So that's like super duper exciting and fun to me. But today we are joined by Sean and Felipe. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
Us here.
How are you?
Good. We're good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. We drove last night from Reno to San Francisco. So we are sitting and looking over the East Bay right now.
Oh, that's incredible.
You decided you had to be in the gayest city in America for National Coming Out Day.
Exactly. And also, it happens to be our 2-month anniversary as of yesterday.
Oh, so we're very excited.
Happy 2-month anniversary.
I love that you guys celebrate month anniversaries as well, because during the whole beginning of me and Tony's relationship, we celebrated month anniversaries.
Well, you have to, right? And I mean, COVID, you could die tomorrow. So it's like you better celebrate while you can.
For sure.
Not to be morbid, but.
We even celebrate, we still celebrate a half-iversary, which is February 13th for us. That's kind of like the half mark for us in terms of like time that we've been together. So at this point, we've been together for just 11 years.
Oh, wow. Just 11 years? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a long time. Well, at the end of this month, we will have been married for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Let's hope that continues to be something that we can celebrate, you know, nationally.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't gotten tired of him yet, so I think it'll be good for a while. So gosh, to get started, what we're going to do is we're actually going to have you guys introduce one another. So Sean, we want you to introduce Felipe to us. And then when he's finished, Felipe, we want you to introduce Sean to us. Tell us who your partner is and all the fun stuff that you love about them and how it brought you here today.
You're putting us on the spot. Okay.
Yeah,
so this is Sean.
We like
this
to
is Sean. I know. This is Sean. And I am the Renoite. So cool that we have that common history, guys.
Love it.
Back in Reno, Nevada, the biggest little city in the world.
Absolutely.
So I always say all roads lead to Reno. It's kind of like the Mecca of the West, because it's true. You can be in China or anywhere and you can meet someone who has been to Reno, Nevada. It's crazy. And that's kind of the origin of our get together. So I want to introduce Felipe Cucalon. Felipe is from Ecuador, and he is going to be 36 in less than a month. And he is the most caring, loving man I've ever had in my life.
He's
just thoughtful and affectionate and observant and spiritual and intelligent and just incredible. And I'm blessed to have him in my life starting a couple months ago during COVID. So Felipe is my COVID miracle.
Wow. I love it.
I love that. Wow. Felipe, that was a very big introduction.
I can follow.
I'm a big guy.
Oh my God.
I love it. Well, Felipe, introduce Sean for us, please.
Well, I'm Felipe. I'm with Sean. Sean is just such a bright star. He's always shining, and that's something that lifts me up, makes me be around him and take care of him. I call him my Seanshine. And it's just it's such a good feeling. He knows what he wants. He's committed, respectful, such a beautiful human, and it's just an amazing feeling to be around him and to be able to be shining with him.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
That is good. You guys are literally bringing tears to my eyes.
Oh, I know we're so crying cute. Too. No, I'm just kidding.
I love it. You know what's so magical is I remember vaguely because it's been so long at this point, but I remember those first feelings in the beginning of a relationship, right? That it was butterflies and that just magic that is a relationship. And so I'm so glad that you guys are in that space and you have these moments and everything. Hang on to them because they're just beautiful and it's so much fun.
But what's interesting, guys, is that while it does have all those qualities that you just mentioned, the butterflies and the excitement and the enthusiasm and the starry-eyedness of it all, it's so strange. I was telling Felipe this while we were driving down from Reno last night, that it also feels like it's just kind of surreal in a way, and also like it's just been there. Like it doesn't have, it has excitement, enthusiasm, but it feels very calm.
Love it.
And there's no drama. Do you know what I mean? And well, unless I'm having a moment, but there's, I can be dramatic, but there's no drama. It just feels like it's settled.
It feels like it's been I don't know how many years we've been together. That's it's just 2 months, but it feels we are so connected that it's just so beautiful. And it feels like we've been for a longer time.
Oh, I love that.
That's wonderful.
Good for you guys. So happy for you. That's magical. So God, walk us through, Sean, we'll start with you. Just walk us through your life, growing up and when did you come to your queer identity and all of that great stuff? And what was that process like? Tell us about all of that.
Do we have a couple of hours? Let's see. I mean, let's go back to 1864. When Nevada became a state. No, I was just a boy. It's interesting. I know now, looking back in my life, that I was always gay. I didn't know how to articulate that, and I didn't know how to identify with it, because I didn't have any gay heroes or icons or examples. But there were people that I met in my young life that I knew inside that they were gay. And so I had some kind of an affinity with those folks, but I didn't know what it meant. And not necessarily a sexual attraction as a young person, but just an affinity. But later, I can think of several times in my life when I could have come out, now that I think back, when I had those feelings. And if I would have been in an environment where I would have had exposure, I think I would have come out much, much younger. I didn't come out till I was 39 years old.
Wow.
And however, I was engaging in, queer activities on my own, covertly, if you will. It was very, mm-hmm. very private, probably from the time I was 25. But if I think back, I went to a small private school, very small. We had 20, I think there were 4 people in our graduating class and maybe 24 at the max of the school itself, K through 12.
Wow, so, Tony, that's smaller than your graduating class.
That's crazy.
Tony had 16, and I thought that was teeny.
Hey, I was valedictorian, so there you go.
Competition was very small.
Right. I skipped 2 grades, too, 2nd grade and 8th grade. So I was, advanced for myself. Yeah.
Look at you.
So it was a small environment. But I knew, back when I was, probably 10, 11, I remember being at the swimming pool and seeing a man take off his towel or something like that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Why is that so interesting to me? But I didn't really know how to act on anything like that. Of course, thank goodness I was 10. But, you know, then later there was a guy at school that I kind of had, you know, I was attracted to, but, you know, it was so small that there weren't other gay people in my school. Right. And so I didn't have an opportunity. And then I was a late bloomer in terms of sexually because with women, because I, and unfortunately, or unfortunately, I'm not sure, I'm not a gold star. I can't claim that. and, you know, but I didn't really, I mean, I thought I should be having in relationships with women or girls, and I was attracted to them to some degree, but I just didn't want to really. But I had tried, you know, and all that. And I did have relationships with women until I finally came out at 39. It was just, I'm done with this. And I just came out with a bang, you know, it's like, this is enough. I can't hide anymore. And so, yeah, it's been an interesting several years.
And so were you dating women and having sex with men?
No, I compartmentalized. I was very, okay. So I'm very I'm a kind of a monogamous type person. Not kind of, I am, at least as far as I know. And when I was with women, so I kind of had two periods of my life. I started having, you know, sexual activities with men and women at the same, not together, but I mean, around the same time. And, but I knew that I was supposed to be with women, right? I was supposed to be with women. So the men thing was kind of like illicit. It was like a one night thing. It was like, it just was a separate compartmentalized part of my life. But then when I started dating a girl, then I was with her and that was that, that was it. And then when I came out, when I was 39, then I was done with the women thing. But if I was, I was struggling before I came out. So when I wasn't with my girlfriend and we broke up, then I kind of reverted. I went back to my core, which was being with guys, you know? And then I was telling myself, and it was very, now I know it wasn't right thinking, but I was telling myself, okay, if I could just find a woman who will let me be who I really am, or if I can find a friend, meaning a guy friend, a buddy, and we can just be, you know, have our own private relationship and no one will know. Those are my two options in my head.
Wow. Right.
And so I struggled for a few years until I went, okay, that's not going to work. And then I just decided, okay, I just met a guy and that was it. And we started dating and I never looked back.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Wow. That's awesome. That's interesting. And your family's reaction to your coming out?
Well, my father had passed away a few years before I came out. And I remember I was with him. I was the last person to see him alive and the first person to see him dead because he was at home and I was caregiving. And I remember kneeling before his bed. He had passed and he was lying there and I was at his head and just kneeling there and crying. And just, I said, I'm so sorry for not being the man that I should be. And, but I know now that that wasn't right thinking, you know, that I am the man that I'm supposed to be. And I also know that he loved me for who I was. It was kind of an unspoken thing. And, yeah. And so I didn't have to come out to him particularly. My mom is great. My sister's awesome. They both love me very much. And my sister, when I told her, she was like, well, it's about time. She's like, go, good. Good for you, Sean. She's like, you know, do this, good. You know? And yeah, so that's been amazing. Unfortunately, I have an older brother that has not been supportive and we no longer have a relationship for many reasons, including that. And so unfortunately, my father started many organizations and my brother and I were supposed to kind of take over those together. And I was told later that my brother promised our father that he would never let a gay man lead our organizations. So that's how my brother views it, evidently.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how it works for me. But yeah, and my family, there's a lot of gay people in my family. I think it's in the blood. Lots of cousins and yeah.
It means there's real people. The real people are the ones who be themselves.
Maybe. These are mostly on my Spanish, on my Latin side. I don't know if I mentioned that. So Felipa's from Ecuador, but my family's Peruvian on my mom's side. And so, yeah, we're a very independent, a powerful kind of people. We learned my grandmother was very, she was a lady and she was such a force, like a matriarch, but she was always teaching everyone how to be you know, independent and self-sufficient. And my mom taught me that too, taught us that too. You know, she didn't do our laundry and she didn't cook our breakfast and she didn't clean our rooms. She taught us how to do all that when we were kids, and how to support ourselves and be who we really are with integrity. So yeah, you're right, Felipe.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. That's, I mean, that's absolutely incredible. Yeah. And good on you for, you know, again, just coming to terms and owning, you know, who you are and
giving yourself permission to be happy.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Well, you know, when we grew up in faith, obviously my father founded a spiritual organization. So there was the faith part of it involved too. And just to conclude my portion, I just want to say that I was very lucky that the faith portion of my life, there was never a theological problem with who I became as a gay person. So what my brother ended up doing and saying was really contrary to the theology. I knew I didn't have a spiritual problem with my being gay. I had a social problem, a social cultural problem, but not a spiritual problem.
Interesting. That's interesting. That's so, I mean, we could do a whole other interview talking about the effects of religion on gay culture, and we've done an episode. We've done a few episodes regarding it, but that within itself is it's just crazy. But Felipe, tell us about your growing up story. Like, what was it like for you growing up, and how did you come to terms with your queer identity, and what has that all been like for you?
Well, it was really difficult at that time because I also come from a really religious family, Christian Catholic. We used to go to mass like every Sunday and just celebrate, and God was involved in everything, and that meant like man and woman. There was nothing else. So I started having my doubts like when I was 15 years old, but I was just telling myself like, no, you are wrong, because that's what family and society was telling me, that like being gay or feeling attracted to a man was wrong and was something bad. So I had my straight life. I had two girlfriends.
We all dabbled in heterosexuality at one point in time or another.
I had my girlfriends, and I've never had a sexual relationship with a woman. I've always been like really precocious with that, but I had my, like, in my 20s, like, when I was, like, 24, 25, I said, okay, enough. You have to put this, like, there. You have to know who you are. You have to realize, and you have to experience it. And there's where I started having my first experiences, traveling from Ecuador to the United States and just meeting people, hanging out, going to gay bars. Those were things that I wasn't able to experience in Ecuador, because it's such a smaller country and a small society back then. Right now it's different, but after that I kind of, when I was like 27, 28, I moved to Buenos Aires, Argentina, and I've actually lived there for 6 years. And I think that's the city where I came out, also for myself. Like, it's just go out there, go to gay places, meet gay people, and just feel free to be yourself, an equal, just like everybody else. So I kind of, it was when I was 29 that I came out from the closet. I told my parents are divorced. So I told my dad first, and he was just really nice, and he just hugged me and he said he loved me and he was there for me. He accepted everything. My mom had a little bit more of an issue, but she told me like deep in her heart she always knew and that she's there for me. So in that matter, that has been really, really good. But I did struggle a lot like with myself, like I wasn't confident enough to being able to speak and say who I was. So I was just pretending to be somebody else. Until you say, well, you have to be yourself. That's a way to find happiness. And that leads to more happiness. And for example, that leads to the opportunity to be with someone like Sean. Like, I mean, just meet somebody that it's like you. And that's why it's important to just be who you are and be just out there and just don't be afraid.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Well, I mean, it sounds like you both were somewhat fortunate in terms of being able to come to, again, your queer identity and where you're at with everything. And again, so thankful and happy that you guys were able to find one another. And kind of, you know, and be a part of, you know, this is like an all new fun chapter in both of your stories, which is amazing.
So I know, I just had these visions of me being old and not being happy. And I was like, no, that's not happening to me. Because I come from a generation where we were kind of that middle generation where there were, you know, I identify and have a lot of, identify with and have a lot of friends who are older men who never did or who came out very late. But then again, I'm young enough to have, you know, friends who've been, you know, gay, come out, you know, been open from the time they were, you know, very young. And I'm kind of in the middle. And so that's one thing I wanted to add is that, that's why I'm an advocate for LGBT, the LGBTQ plus community, and for self-identifying and for being open in very respectful and ways. Everyone has his own timing or her own timing on this. But I think about the young people, because when I was hiding, I was in, you know, the gay bars, and when they were really gay bars, not, you know, integrated like they are now, you know, I remember using a different name and, you know, and seeing young people who didn't have the foundation that I had. Fortunately, I had a foundation of growth and of professionalism and of family where I always had something to go to, right? So I didn't have to flail in society with nowhere to go. I always had to go home. I always had responsibility. But if I didn't have all that, I would think of myself, what would I be doing if I didn't have all of that obligation? If I just didn't know what to do, I'd be in a dark corner. Maybe I'd be on drugs. Maybe I would have killed myself. In fact, I had, you know, suicidal ideology for a while, I think about that, you know, young people who struggle. So it's so important for us to find a way to self-identify and find role models. And that's like Felipe said, going to Buenos Aires, he went to a place where he was able to finally see other people. I kind of just came into it myself, you know, back in the days with gay.com and dial up.
We remember. No, I mean, it's funny you say that because, like, I remember my time in Reno, and I remember, I think I was sharing with you, Sean, Tronics, the gay bar that was in Reno. And I remember going there with like lesbian friends. They were in a relationship, and I remember going there with them and making that okay, right? It was okay for me to go there because I was going.
Yes.
I wasn't out. I was going there in like support of.
Yeah, there was a reason, right? You had an excuse, right? Or an explanation.
Yeah. And then I remember. Every once in a while, I would go like with, I had a gay friend named Tyler. And I would go there with him.
Tyler's gay.
And I remember I would go there with him sometimes, and sometimes I would get there earlier than he would. And, you know, everyone would be like, oh, like, hi. And I would be like, oh, like, no, I'm here to like find a friend. Like I was there for my friend,
right.
You know, and those things were crazy. And I remember I left Reno to go move to Florida, and it was moving to Florida that I said, you know what, this is like me coming to terms with my gay, like it's a fresh start for me. So I'm going to go to Florida and I'm going to be me. Like
isn't that interesting?
Gay me. It's crazy.
So I had that same thing. I was 29, and Felipe said he came out when he was 29. I would have come out for sure when I was 29. And you know what I did? I saved up money and I was taking myself to Spain. I said, I'm taking myself on a vacation and I need to get out of here, because I knew deep inside that I couldn't be me there.
Yeah.
At least I didn't feel safe. I'm sure I could have, but I didn't know how. Yeah. So yeah. I was tired of the back, you know, the dark corners and the night times and the gay.com and whatever. And I was a pretty good kid, you know, guy. I mean, I wasn't doing anything crazy, but I just needed to go. And I went to, I told my mom, I'm going to Spain. And she goes, oh, can I go with you? And I went, and then I said, okay, sure. Because she was just graduating from law school. She went to law school later. And so she went to Spain with me. And that kind of didn't work out so well for my self-identifying. So I came back and started a seven-year relationship with a girl. And then I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So yeah, whether it's Florida or Spain or Buenos Aires, you know.
It's crazy because, like, you know, Tony and I say all the time that we're such fans of the young gays right now. Like, there's people, there's these gay, they're like 12, 11, 10 years old. Yes. And they're just like
out and proud,
gayer than Christmas. And we just love it so much. We're such fans of it. I'm a fan of it too
because I love that they can be who they are. But you know what? I also think for themselves, it's always important. It doesn't matter if you, have that privilege to come out now, or if you, let's say you're, you know, you grew up in America and you have, you don't have to struggle as much financially as your parents did. That's wonderful. That's the whole idea, right? To make it better for the next generation. But I also think it's important to educate, to teach the past and our history, because, you know how you always heard when you're growing up, I walked to school. I didn't have shoes and I walked up 3 miles of hill or whatever it was. You know, it's kind of fun to hear some of the past and to know the struggles so that the young people can understand what was
do better.
What it was like before them so that they can not take it for granted and appreciate what they have, you know, so that they're not spoiled and pampered. And that's the part that I think is the responsibility of our generation, right, is to impart that information to them in ways that they can accept and understand, and at the same time celebrate who they are and that they can be, and understand too that it's not that way everywhere. It's not that way everywhere, right?
Well, and also we were the generation that struggled, and now that struggle was for the next generation. So we can just break the boundaries and just let the generations that are coming just to be able to be free on themselves and empowered. That's important.
I love it. So tell us, you guys, how did you meet? How did, you know, you went through your queer journey, you guys dabbled in heterosexuality for a little bit, and then you managed to find one another. How did that happen? And then what is your favorite part of it so far?
Well, hey, Marco, Reno, dating scene, no.
COVID,
not really that great. Okay, COVID. I mean, they're good people, sure. Smaller gay community, you know, Reno used to be pretty kind of a gay mecca for a long time because it was like the little stepsister of San Francisco, but not a big gay dating scene. You know everybody. It's the 1/2 degree of separation. I'm very social and I'm very involved in the community as a leader and an advocate in LGBT and other areas. So I know a lot of people and I meet a lot of people. And, you know, I've had some boyfriends here and there, but it's not happening. I was at the point where I'm leaving this town. I've got to go live somewhere else and get out of here, primarily because I wanted a romantic life. And I'm just not one of those online people. I mean, you know, Facebook, sure. Instagram, sure. And I don't have anything against the online apps or dating. I just didn't want everyone to see me, I think, partly in Reno going, oh, there's Sean on the dating app. You know, it's like,
right.
And so I didn't really go on that often at all. And so I was kind of that person. No, not going to be for me. And literally in the midst of COVID, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put a blank profile on Scruff and Grindr and just go see how awful it really is because, you know, it is because I, you know, go on there and I've gone on there before, you know, you see all your friends, you're like, oh God, I can see them out and about. I don't need to see them on here. You know, I don't need to know all about their illicit activities. And so I got on Scruff and there's this picture of this handsome guy with a dog. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to say hi. So I said, howdy, of course, because I'm from Nevada, which is in and of itself very strange because I don't think that's a really good gay come on. But anyway, I said, howdy. And then he responded. And my first question was, are you from here? And he says, no. And I said to him, hey, then maybe there's a chance. And then I said, well, where are you from? Oh, how long have you been here? And he says, 2 months. I go, hey, there's really a chance that he hadn't been in Reno and a long time and been passed around, you know, that kind of thing. And then I said, where are you from? And he said, Ecuador. And I said, what? My family's from Peru. And so we're neighbors, right? And so we started talking, and then he asked if I spoke Spanish. So we started, you know, texting or messaging in Spanish. Then we got on each other's Instagram. And then the craziest thing is that through discussions of our families and so forth, we realized that we actually are distantly related, which is very
bizarre.
That's
so fascinating. Yeah, that's so crazy. That's weird. So fascinating.
Oh, yes, that's amazing. That's it. From my mother's side, I have family that went from Peru, from northern Peru to Ecuador. So when he mentioned a last name, I said like, "Oh, that's familiar." I'm gonna look around, and then we realized that yes, we had a
common
last name back there.
Not just a last name; it's actually we know that we are actually like, you know, like three generations back or something. Your cousins, second, third, who the heck knows.
That's crazy. That's oh my so gosh. Funny.
What are the odds?
That is, I mean, that I is know. Insane.
Someone from Ecuador goes to Buenos Aires, goes back to Ecuador, goes to the East Coast, goes to Reno, comes to Reno, finds a Peruvian who he's related to by some distant relative. That's so bizarre.
on a random map. Yeah, that's funny.
That's so funny.
So I will never diss Scruff again.
Good. Another successful online dating story.
Tony and I met on Adam for Adam. I don't know if you remember Adam for Adam desktop app. You had to get on the computer.
I found him because he was not supposed to be my ex, and he was on there. So I remember Adam.
I like how he became your ex.
We met on Adam for Adam, so we are advocates of online dating.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like fun. So, and that happened 11 years ago we met, and so we, you know, it happens. There are plenty of success stories. We, you know, Matthew and Paul, they met on Grindr, you know.
Lots of people.
We know a lot of people.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think it's becoming more and more normal. I know when it first came out, it was like people were embarrassed that that's how they met, but I don't think that's a thing anymore.
It's a tool. It's a tool to, yeah, I mean, for me coming from Ecuador, and I mean, before moving to Nevada, I was living in Maine, and before Maine, I was living in upstate New York. Every time I was going to a different place, I will use the app to meet people, to put myself out there and say, hey, I'm here, hello. And that doesn't mean that I was looking for other things. It's
like networking.
Yeah, I mean, just it's just a tool. It's a way to communicate and just say, hey, I'm here. I wanna meet people. And that's what I was doing exactly.
That's how Tony and I met. It was I needed more gay friends in the area. And Tony had just moved across the bridge from Tampa to St. Petersburg. So he was just kind of on there. And so we met and we were just supposed to be friends. We had a bond over some like common interests and we were like, let's go like hang out and like enjoy chicken wings together and like have $3 Long Island iced teas together because that's just, you know, the way to do it. And
then it went to chicken thighs and chicken breasts. And it just turned.
Exactly. And yeah, next thing you knew, Tony told me he was into me and then he kissed me in the parking lot. And we've been together ever since. Like it's been crazy. So much to your point, Felipe, it's a tool. Sometimes, you know, you can use it for your tool. but other times you can use it as a tool to like connect with and meet people. So before we end this, I do want to know what you guys have been together for 2 months. What's been the best part about being together, both of you guys? What's the best part about the relationship and about getting to know one another and you know, being this far into the relationship so far?
I'll have to say that how connected we are, like spiritually. It's like we are on just the same page, same vibration. We share that. We, I mean, we just feel so comfortable with each other and just being ourselves. That's, I mean, it's completely the best part of it. Like, I don't feel like I'm with somebody that is faking who he is, or I don't feel I have to pretend to be somebody else. I'm just being myself, and I think that he's also doing that, and it's just natural, organic, coming, happening. Yes,
I love it.
Right, I definitely agree with that. I also think the sex is great. No, the best part, I really, I think it's just the connectivity. It's almost like, I don't know. I've always believed that soulmates exist. I don't know where they are in the world or how you find them, but I kind of feel like that. I kind of feel. I remember just one time, like, looking, I was holding him, and I was looking down, and I thought it was my arm, but it was his arm.
Oh.
Like, it just looked like the same person.
Oh.
And
that's so sweet.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like the. It's
that
like,
doesn't happen to us.
No.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah, it's like, underneath it does.
Right.
No, it's just like enmeshed. That's a good word, enmeshed.
I love that. That's awesome. We actually just did an episode on soulmates, so you'll have to listen to that, because I believe, well, I'm not even going to get into it. You have to listen to the episode to hear my views on it, but it makes my heart warm to know that you both feel as though you found your soulmate and that it's working for you. So we're so happy for you guys and wish you many, 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 many more months and years together, because it sounds like you guys are making each other happy, and that's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So tell our listeners, if they want to learn more about you guys or anything that you're involved with, where can they find you on the social medias or anything else?
So this is Sean, always by name, Sean Savoy. I'm the original. There are some other imposters who have come out after me with my same name. It's not me. There's a comedian and a football player and actually a British porn star, but they are not me. Wow. So Sean Savoy, SEANSAVOY. And Instagram, I'm on Twitter a little bit, but mostly Instagram and Facebook, where you can find me for sure.
Great.
So this is Felipe. I'm on Instagram most of the time. I like animals and photography, so I share a lot of pictures of nature and animals, horses, just photographs there. And it's Felipe Cucalon. It will be FelipeCucalon all together. Wow. And then I'm also a dog trainer. So I also have a different page that is called Trust Your Dog. So I just post there my experience with my dog and how I've been traveling and what it means for me to be having a life with a dog.
Oh, that is amazing. Yeah, we'll definitely put links in the show notes, so that everyone has the ability to check out both of your profiles and then anything else that you all have going on as well. We are so happy to have connected with you both. Thank you so much for your time and for chit-chatting with us today. We wish you nothing but love and peace and every good thing that you can possibly come up with in your relationship. We're so happy for you both.
Thank you both. Thank you so much. We appreciate being on your show. And we wish the same for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's very lovely. Thank you. So we are going to take a short break, but we will be back in just a bit. So if you're anything like me, then you love buying things.
I don't think anybody likes buying things as much as you do.
I will take that as an accolade. Thank you.
Take it however you want.
That said, I like buying things and find even more pleasure buying from LGBTQ+ businesses and services.
That's why once a month, Marco and I host a mini-sode under the relationship umbrella called #QueerBiz, and we need your help.
If you are a business owner or like shopping from an LGBTQ+ business or service, please reach out to us.
Head to our website, podrelationship.com, right now and submit your favorite queer business or service right there on our site.
On the third Friday of every month, a new episode of #QueerBiz will air, where we will talk to a queer business owner about their business or service.
Our goal is to connect you all with people within the community that you can support and lift up by shopping from or utilizing their business or service.
So head to podrelationship.com today and submit a #QueerBiz for the next episode of our monthly minisode.
And don't forget to check out the businesses we've already highlighted. Their information is on our website, so go give them a little love when you can.
We thank you for supporting our LGBTQ+ family.
I think we all know that I'm not much for the social medias. If you all have even listened to the podcast for a second, then you know tweeting and trending are foreign concepts to me.
Yes, babe. We are all aware of your aversion to anything that even remotely resembles a hashtag or DM.
But I do know that Relationship has some amazing content on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And that is all thanks to my husband, because I want no part of it.
Well, thank you, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We are at PodRelationship on all social media platforms.
There you can check out our #GayRelationshipGoals for the week.
You can be inspired by some of our queer quotes and corresponding song lyrics.
You can also read reviews, catch glimpses of us, and even check out the week's guests.
So head to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook and follow us. We are at PodRelationship on all platforms.
We look forward to your double taps and comments, even though I have no idea what that means.
Just quit while you're ahead.
You got it. So that's going to do it for this week's episode.
Thanks for tuning in and being a part of this really important conversation.
Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at PodRelationship. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us and graffiti our logo across the side of your house.
That's an idea. Yeah.
Do it.
If you have any situations or comments that you'd like us to address on the show, you can email us at relationshiptoquestions@gmail.com or submit to our website, podrelationship.com.
Don't forget to check out our YouTube and IGTV channels, Relationship, for a behind-the-scenes post-show conversation about this week's episode.
A special thank you to our Patreon members. We hope you enjoyed the early access to the episode and behind-the-scenes interview with this week's guests. Tony and I will harass your ears next week.
And remember, change is some stressful shit.
Oh boy, is it ever.
If you haven't become a patron or you're not donating to the Relationship Podcast Patreon account, I'm starting to question your decisions about life.
Same. I don't understand why you wouldn't want to be a part of all the fun we have on our episodes on Patreon, and you can't even listen to them unless you become a Patreon member.
Yep. Every week we do a rapid-fire Q&A with the week's guests and find out a little more about them while having a few laughs and lots of aha moments.
Oh my god, yes. Questions like, what book or movie title would describe your sex life, or what is your best and worst qualities, are sure to make you laugh out loud.
And once a month, Marco and I get on for another edition of Critelli Crap, our very own version of listener situations, where we act as a listener with a problem from our own relationship and seek neutral, non-offended advice from one another as if we were friends, not husbands.
That has quickly become my favorite segment.
Me too, although I worry about it sometimes.
So head to patreon.com/podrelationship today and start donating as little as $5 a month for extra content separate from the podcast. Your donations give you access to the weekly episodes and early access to the podcast episodes as well.
Yep, that's patreon.com/podrelationship for more content from your favorite hosts.
We look forward to receiving your money.
I mean, that's one way to put it.
Bye, y'all.